Is that the wrong thing to say? Bancroft asks. I force a smile. No, not wrong at all. Thanks. Thank you. I'm stumbling over my words, aware I need to leave, but I'm having a hard time not going in for a hug. It turns out I don't need to worry about it. As I step around Bancroft, his huge hand wraps around my wrist. The sensation is damn well magical. It's been almost 5 weeks since he's touched me. Longer than that since he's kissed me, accidentally or not. In that time, I've been flirting my ass off with him on the phone. So much flirting. So much self-gratifying once I'm no longer on the phone with him. And right now, he's touching me. I must make some kind of noise, because his gaze locks on mine, and he hesitates. It's only for the briefest moment. I don't want to lose this opportunity, so I step toward him. It's enough of a positive signal. He tugs me closer still, and wraps his free arm around me. Now the contact isn't limited to his hand wrapped around my wrist. It's his entire massive frame pressed up against mine. He winds an arm around my waist, his palm smoothing over my lower back, pulling me in tighter. I imagine how different this would have been had it happened when I was still just wearing a towel. I swear I hear a hum come out of him, and I barely resist the urge to drop my hand to his ass and give it a squeeze. I'm pretty sure I feel his nose in my hair and his breath on my neck before he lets me go. When he steps back, he jams his hands in his pockets. I'm glad you're home, I say. Safely. Home, safely. I tack on at the end, although it doesn't help much with the breathless quality of my voice or the fact that every nerve in my body is singing.
Me too.
Based on the gravelly tone, I'd like to think I'm not alone in this feeling. Okay, well, I should really go now.
Okay.
He nods a bunch of times. See you in the morning. It's only possible if I'm still awake when he gets up.
Definitely.
I leave the condo before I say or do anything stupid. Now more than ever, it's apparent that I need to find a new place. I have feelings for this man, and it's not just about wanting to get naked with him. The feelings have become real over the past several weeks. For me, at least. If I keep socking away the money from my tips, I should have enough for first and last in the next month or so. Maybe sooner. The longer I stay here, the more difficult it's going to be to manage the sexual tension between us, if this welcome home is any indicator. At this point, I'd really like to get out of his space before I get into his bed. Sleeping with him while I'm still dependent on him for a place to live creates an inequity I don't want to deal with. I never want to be in a position where I feel like I'm being kept, and that's exactly what this will be for me. Chapter 15. Accidental Snuggles. Ruby. By the time I get home from work, it's almost 2 in the morning. The condo is quiet. I assume Bancroft is asleep. As I head for bed, I nearly bypass my own room and keep going to his. That would be a colossally embarrassing mistake. For the first time since he left on his trip, I sleep in the spare bedroom that's supposed to be mine. It feels really strange. Bancroft is walking around the apartment in a pair of boxers. Aside from the boxers, he's naked. No shirt, no socks, just boxers. And for some reason, they're all wet and clinging to him. I don't know why he's wet, but I offer to help him out of his soggy underwear, dripping on the floor, making a messy puddle around his feet. I reach for the waistband, aware I seem to be going against my own plan not to sleep with him, and watch goosebumps rise along his skin. just as I pull them over his hips, I wake up. So much sadness. The dream fades away, and all I'm left with is dry mouth and zinging clit. I reach for the glass on the nightstand, but it's empty. It's 4 in the morning. I've only been asleep for an hour. I don't remember finishing it off before I fell asleep. I do, however, remember rolling my marble while shoving my face into my pillow to thoughts of Bancroft before I passed out. The extra exertion probably didn't help with my thirst issues. I also have a headache, possibly from being underhydrated. Diva told me to drink more water last night, but it must not have been enough. I throw off the covers and hoist myself out of bed. I grab the bottle of aspirin tucked into my nightstand and my glass and make the trek to the kitchen. The built-in water dispenser in the fridge provides the best, most amazing cold water ever, which is what I need right now. I lean my head against the fridge as I wait for the glass to fill, down 2 aspirin with the water, then fill the glass again before I head back to bed with my eyes half closed. I slide under the now cool sheets, which makes me shiver a little, and rest my cheek against the pillow. Closing my eyes, I try to bring back the dream I was having before thirst woke me. I go back to the beginning, where he must have been dressed, because I'm a big fan of taking him from a suit to his birthday suit in my head. I imagine the way Bane looks in his button-down with his tie hanging loose, or his snug-fitting undershirt. As I mentally undress him in my mind, I can suddenly smell him. I must be on the verge of dreaming again, because it's incredibly vivid. I snuggle deeper into the pillow, willing my mind to go where my body would like to. I hear a groan, low and deep. And then the bed shifts, and a heavy arm comes thudding down on my hip. My eyes pop open. What the hell? This is definitely not a dream. At least I don't think it is. The bed shifts. Nope. Not a dream. Who the hell is in bed with me? The sheets rustle and the mattress dips as the hand attached to the arm that's resting on my hip starts moving up my body. This feels nice. Comes the mumbled male voice that belongs to the hand exploring me over the blanket. Holy shit. Bane is in bed with me. What is Bane doing in bed with me? I'm frozen, sort of. I mean, I'm not really sure what I should do. Because as much as I'm enjoying being felt up, even through the covers, I'm still really confused as to why exactly this has happened, or how. Suddenly, Bane's very fit, very warm chest is pressed against my back. And wait. Oh my God. Oh my God. Is that? It can't be. Oh yes! It is. Bane is naked. How do I know this? Because I can feel him against my lower back, where my sleep tank has ridden up, leaving several inches of skin exposed. And his erection, his very hard, ample erection, is pressed right up against me. My theory on big hands is definitely true. He nuzzles into my hair, burrowing his way through it until his stubbly chin rubs against my neck. I don't think he's actually awake, so I stay still, waiting for him to, I don't know, stop moving around. I just need him to settle, and then I can figure out what I should do. Well, I know what I should do. But I'm enjoying this a little too much at the moment. He doesn't settle, though. Instead, he adjusts the comforter so the hand that was exploring over the top is now exploring underneath. His arm comes around my waist, and then his warm fingers slide under the hem of my tank and splay across my stomach, moving up. He gets stuck at the elastic-y built-in bra and drags the fabric up. He cups one of my boobs through several layers of cotton and groans. I barely restrain my own when he rolls his hips. I open my mouth to say something, like maybe, "Hey, Bane, why are you in my bed feeling me up?" Or, "If you wanted to get your freak on with me, there are better, less awkward ways than creeping into my bed in the middle of the night and surprising me." Or even, "Mind if I check out how generous that stick is jabbing into my low back?" But none of those things come out of my mouth. Instead, all I do is whisper moan, "Bancroft." It doesn't seem to have an impact on the breast palming. In fact, he's gone from palming to kneading. He makes a second attempt to get under the elastic with a grunt. I should stop this. My brain registers this thought and immediately wants to dismiss it as unnecessary. I really should do something apart from lie here, because this shouldn't be happening in the middle of the night without some kind of adult discussion in which we weigh the consequences of me living in his house, being his pet sitter, and getting a little screw in on the side. Especially since he's mentioned he's not interested in getting into a relationship while he's doing all this traveling. But since I've been fantasizing about the exact scenario, I'm a little too willing to let it go on for a little while longer. This time, he makes it under the elastic, his wide, warm palm curving around my breast. And then I feel his hot breath on my neck, followed by his lips on my skin. Oh, Jesus. Is he going to? Oh, no. Oh, yes. He rolls my nipples between his thumb and finger, his groan vibrating against me as his lips part, and his tongue sweeps across my skin. Okay. At this point, I have zero good excuses for not saying something to stop him, since he's still obviously not quite conscious. And instead of doing the one thing I should, I arch and press my butt against his erection. It nestles all snug along the cleft of my ass. My underwear are clearly barring the way, although they're not full coverage, so I can feel a lot of skin on skin. With a final rough nipple twist, he abandons my breast, and his palm moves heavily down my stomach. My eyes go wide as I realize he has a destination in mind. I would like to say my next action is a result of my acknowledging that this has gone too far. However, it has more to do with the fact that I think I need to shave my nether regions. I grab his hand just as it passes my navel. "Whoa!" I rasp yell. That seems to startle him out of whatever semi-sleep-induced lust haze he's in. His hand retracts, and he rolls over as I jump out of the bed. And that's when I realize I'm not in my bedroom. I'm in his. I'm flailing around like an idiot as a very sleepy, bleary Bancroft blinks at me with confusion. God, he's sexy when he's just woken up. My eyes follow his hand, which is smoothing down his stomach. And that's when I take note that the sheets have abandoned his glorious body. He is so naked, and I can see every inch of him. Well, apart from his right thigh. Bancroft shirtless is a vision. Bancroft naked is damn well fucking phenomenal. "Oh, God, that is huge!" I say when I finally reach the visual destination of Erectiontopia. It's not completely dark in here, thanks to the night owls of the city who are awake in the buildings across the street. I can see very clearly how ample his erection truly is. And I'm definitely gawking. In my defense, there's quite a lot to gawk at. My mouth is actually watering. It looks that amazing. Prior to this moment, I've never really been all that impressed with a penis. If there was a penis rating system, Bancroft's would be in a class all its own. Now, part of this may be due to the amazing shadows cast over his naked body by the ambient lighting. It may in part be due to the entire package framing the penis I'm currently staring at. I can scan his naked body, wishing like hell for a photographic memory, because his body is a gift from the heavens, and that erection is magnificent. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being depressingly inadequate and 10 being deity-inspiring, his dick is so beautiful, it would make angels weep and virgins offer themselves up for sacrifice. Okay, maybe not that last part, but it's a gorgeous penis, and I'm really, really turned on. Now I want to get back under those sheets with him and pretend I didn't just accidentally crawl into his bed and let him feel me up for quite a lengthy amount of time.
Ruby?
He pulls a sheet up to cover his junk.
What are you?
He looks me over. His hand is resting on his erection, cradling it. That could have been me if I'd been smart enough to keep up the ruse. I try to cover myself because my choice of sleep outfit doesn't leave all that much to the imagination. Well, more than Bane's, obviously, but it's still pretty skimpy. It was an accident. Sorry. I spin around and sprint to the door, slamming it behind me. I run all the way down the hall to my bedroom, being much more careful about closing the door this time. And of course, I lock it. My embarrassment is so huge, bigger even than the cock I was just staring at, and there is no way I can face Bane right now.
Chapter 16. Hard to control hard-ons. Bancroft. I'm lying in my bed, staring at my closed door with my hard-on in my hand, wondering what the hell just happened. Well, I know what just happened, but the question is, why was Ruby in my bed and why isn't she in it anymore? Both myself and my erection, who I feel is an independent, although very linear, thinker, would like an answer to this question. I consider getting up and going to see if she's okay, but I'm still achingly hard, so I can't go anywhere right now. Also, based on her rushed exit and her inability to speak in coherent sentences, she seems pretty damn embarrassed about the entire thing. I suppose I can wait until morning, which is only 2 hours away anyway, and we can deal with it then. As I lie here, filtering through the foggy event that has just transpired, I consider how much of it was related to my dream and how much was real. Mostly all I recall is some boob grabbing and nipple tweaking and some cock to ass rubbing. I would like to do more of all of those things with her while conscious. After 5 more minutes of lying in my bed thinking about Ruby, I give up on her magically reappearing at my door and rub one out, alone. This time I have some real-ish fodder to help me reach the end. The only thing that would be better is if it was the lovely Ruby helping me out instead of me doing it on my own. Usually orgasms are a decent sedative, but it doesn't work the way I'd like it to. I can't seem to fall back asleep, and 90 minutes later my alarm goes off. I pull on a pair of boxers and shorts before I leave my room, something I'm going to have to get used to doing with Ruby living here, at least until we get past this whole awkward reintroduction phase. When I woke up with my hand almost in her panties, I figured we were about to resolve the issue, but then she bolted. I put coffee on and riffle through the contents of the fridge. It needs to be stocked. Pickings are fairly slim. I didn't even think to check the contents before I went to the office yesterday afternoon. How my arrival was received and my expectations are not at all in line with each other. In my head, Ruby greeted me at the door with high enthusiasm and little in the way of clothing. I got the little in the way of clothing part, but the enthusiasm was replaced with awkwardness, and I hadn't taken into account that she'd have to work, and definitely not for the next 4 days. Instead of sitting around in my condo feeling sorry for myself, I went to work. It helped keep my mind occupied, and it gave me a leg up on Lex, who didn't show up until 4 hours after I did. By that time, I'd already gone through the spreadsheets, marketing plans, and development costs with my father. He'd seemed impressed by my dedication to the team and the projects. Having just got off a plane a few hours earlier, he'd fully expected me to take the day, and I would have if Ruby had been home. I survey the contents of the fridge, deciding what I'd like to make for breakfast. I have the necessary ingredients for pancakes. I've gotten used to starting or ending my day with Ruby, and I'd like it to continue. Once the coffee is made, I knock on her door. I'm met with silence. I try again. The odd knot forming in my stomach gets tighter. Ruby, I call out when the second knock produces more silence. I try the knob, but it's locked. Shit. Did she think I was going to try and get back into bed with her last night? Was this preventative or born out of embarrassment? I've talked to her almost every single day since I left, apart from a handful of travel days. There's been an extensive amount of sexual innuendo in those conversations. In a lot of ways, it's felt like long-distance dating. I've had weeks to get to know Ruby, weeks to appreciate her sense of humor, time to get to know her mannerisms, time to discover what makes her tick, what her insecurities are, how strong she is, how much she loves my pets, how much I appreciate her choice of bedwear. I might have been reading things wrong, but my expectation was that when I came home, all that two-dimensional flirting would turn into something three-dimensional, with nudity. That I was so close to that reality last night makes me impatient to get the moment back. Except I have a feeling that's not going to happen right now. I give it one last try. I have no idea what time she came home, and I fell asleep on the couch last night and didn't wake up until after midnight. She hadn't appeared to be home at that point, although I hadn't checked her room. Her shoes, a pair of worn flats, sit close to the front door. I don't remember if they were at the door when I relocated from the couch to my bedroom. I give up on trying to wake Ruby. I take my time getting ready for work, hoping she'll come out before I have to leave. She doesn't. My entire day is spent in meetings presenting the PowerPoint I created on the flight home while my brother slept. I didn't consult Lex, determined to have my own findings. He's currently stewing in the seat opposite me. Every time he tries to throw me a curveball question, I have the right answer, or at least one my father approves of. There's always been competition between us, and my approach to this hasn't done anything to make it better. But I don't like being micromanaged, and that's how the last 5 weeks have been with us working together. My hope is that this trip overseas will be my last for a while, and that I'll have done enough to be able to ask to manage a few of the New York properties. We have 10, so it should be doable. When the meeting is over, my father pulls me aside. I really should be able to ask for what I want, but I'll have to put the feelers out first. My father always has a master plan, and I'm concerned it's one that involves more travel for me. I take a seat in one of the club chairs in his office, and he sits across from me, rather than behind his desk. Good work in London. This is high praise from my father. Thanks. It was a good learning experience. I feel like I'm getting a good handle on the renovation aspect. Once you're settled in, I think it would be a good idea for you to work with the design team on the new build concepts in Germany. This is preferable to working with Lex, but if I'm part of the design team, there's a good chance my father is going to want me to be part of the groundbreaking team. That means another stint overseas, which is not what I want. Layla heads that up, doesn't she? You don't think it would be better for me to work with Griffin instead for a while? He's been taking care of some of the Chicago hotels. That's much closer to home than Germany. Are you worried about your ability to focus around Layla? Pardon? I smooth my hand over my tie. Layla's been part of the design team for quite a while. She's incredibly career-driven and focused, so I can't see why he thinks I won't be able to manage working with her. My father rolls his eyes. Oh, come on, Bancroft. You've spent the past 7 years with an entourage of groupies running around after you. I'm just reminding you that this is the business world, and you'll need to keep a level, focused head, even around the lookers like Layla. Attractiveness isn't the issue, Dad. I played professional rugby. I didn't do battle in a Spartacus-style arena. I can handle myself around attractive women. Besides, Layla isn't my type. Until he mentioned it, I hadn't even really noticed she was attractive at all. She's blonde and petite. I prefer dark hair and an athletic build like Ruby. What about local renovations? It would be good to work on some projects directly with you. The best way to appeal to my father is through his ego. He smiles and taps his pen on the arm of his chair. That will happen in the future once you've had sufficient training. You don't think I would benefit from having your expertise? I try to tamp the frustration. I don't want to close doors with him before I've even managed to pick the lock. You will always have my expertise. I'll oversee all aspects of the projects you work on. But you need a good year of getting your feet wet and learning the company ropes. I want you to be comfortable with all the top-level employees. When does ground break for the project in Germany? Late fall, if things go smoothly. There will be other projects I'll want you to have a hand in as well. The hotels in California need attention, and there's property in Costa Rica that we're interested in. He's talking more travel, like I knew he would. I don't want more travel. Except more travel would mean I'd need someone to stay and take care of Tiny and Francesca. It's an excuse to have Ruby stick around longer or at least stay at my place periodically, if she still wants to. As soon as this meeting is over, I need to talk to her. Hopefully she's awake now. What about the New York renovations? He's already looking at his phone, pretending to check emails. It's what he does when he's either done with the discussion or he wants to avoid a topic. Unfortunately, I'm his son, and I'm a lot like he is in many regards, so I refuse to take the hint for what it is. Aren't there plans to start those in the new year? Isn't Griffin working on the renovation project for the Times Square location? Now that I'm on board, he and I could work together. The project would move faster then, wouldn't it? We could start right after New Year's, that way we won't miss out on prime summer tourism and we'll still get the holiday business. My father stops typing an email to regard me. You've been thinking about this? Of course. New York has so much opportunity for growth. I'd love to be involved in that project. I bite my tongue before I can say I want to make this my hub. It's a ways off. We can talk about it later. It's not a no. I'll take it. I'd like to say I see Ruby when I get home. I don't. I send her a message asking how she's doing, then I fall asleep on the couch and drag my ass to my bedroom around 1 in the morning. I don't have a response when I wake up the next morning. I debate knocking on her door, but I have no idea what time she got in, and since she hasn't responded to my message, I leave it alone, although I don't want to. My morning is full of meetings again, discussions about the projects in the UK and abroad, and I'm immersed in the building, project management side of the company. I understand what my father is doing. He doesn't want me to settle in one area of the business yet because there are so many sides to it, and if I'm going to run it jointly with my brothers eventually, I need to understand all aspects. And I need to be able to work with both of them, no matter how challenging it is. By noon, I still haven't heard from Ruby. I either need a drink or to punch someone out, or to talk to Ruby. The latter would be my preference. I have a decent reason to contact her that will inevitably get a response. Francesca's feeding schedule. Now that I'm home, we need to communicate about that kind of thing so we don't overfeed her. I had a routine, but I'm guessing with Ruby's odd hours, it's changed significantly over the past month. I make sure the first message I send is convoluted enough that she would require an explanation to understand exactly what I was talking about. It works. Her response comes a few minutes later in the form of several question marks. I close my office door, turn the lock, and hit the video call button. Ruby answers on the third ring.
Hey.
Her voice is gravelly and low. I'm not looking at her, though. I'm looking at the ceiling of her bedroom. Did I wake you up?
Yeah, but I needed to get up. What's up? That text was worse than your handwriting. It made no sense.
Sorry about that. I realized with me being back, Francesca's feeding schedule might be a little out of whack. I thought it would be easier to talk about it. I hear a drawer open. It's a little squeaky.
I never thought of that. I've just been feeding her like usual. Should I not? Do you want to be the one to do it? Why don't we keep it the way it is until we have a chance to sit down together? Okay, I can do that.
I'm still looking at the ceiling, and I can hear the patter of feet and a rustle. What are you doing?
Getting dressed.
Did you answer the phone naked? There's motion, and suddenly I'm looking at Ruby's arched brow.
You're really asking me that?
I fight the grin that's trying to spread across my face. It's a legitimate question. She's propped the phone up on the dresser based on my view of the room.
You know, you can just call me without the video component now like normal people do.
It's a habit. I like seeing you. and feeling you, like I did in my bed the other night, but I'm getting to that.
I'm so attractive when I'm half asleep.
And she's given me the perfect segue. Speaking of being half asleep, do you want to talk about what happened the other night? Her gaze shifts away and she busies herself with something outside of my line of view, so I'm only looking at her chin.
I'm sorry, the other night?
Her voice is surprisingly even. Are we pretending it didn't happen?
Pretending what didn't happen?
She's still not making eye contact. You in my bed? Her brow furrows.
You mean while you were away? I told you I fell asleep in there a couple of times. I changed the sheets before you came home. If it was a big deal, you should have said something.
I'm talking about you in my bed with me in it. She blinks a couple of times. She's giving away nothing. A sly smile spreads across her face and her voice drops to a sultry whisper. She drags a finger down the side of her neck. I follow the movement, hoping she'll go lower to the breast I cupped not that long ago.
Have you been dreaming about me, Bane?
My eyes snap back up to her face. The answer to that question is yes. For the past several weeks, I've been dreaming about her nonstop. You were in my bed the other night. She laughs.
Was I now?
Now it's my turn to frown. There's no way I dreamed that. It was far too visceral. A knock at my office door prevents me from asking more questions and verifying that I'm not losing my mind over this woman. Griffin taps his watch through the glass pane. I check the time. Shit, I have a meeting in 5 minutes. I have to go.
Do I need to feed Francesca?
I did it this morning. She just needs playtime.
I love playtime.
Her grin is pure sexual evil right before the screen goes blank. It looks like the video flirting is still on. I have to do some creative rearranging in my pants before I get out of my chair. I grab my laptop, notepad, and file folder, keeping them at waist level. It's been a long time since I've had to shield an issue in my pants. I go into the office on Saturday and work from home on Sunday. I get up early because I'm incapable of sleeping in and go for a run on the treadmill. By 9, I'm showered and there's still no sign of life from Ruby's room. The only way I know she's home is because her shoes are by the door. I settle in at my computer with a coffee and pull up my research files. The past weeks have been exhausting mentally. I'm beginning to grow accustomed to using my brain for this type of analytic purpose, but it's been an adjustment. I'm surrounded by pie charts and graphs. Comparative data analysis was never my favorite part of marketing, but I learned how to be good at it. It's noon when I hear movement in the kitchen. It's followed by muttering and the sound of the fridge door opening. I stay where I am, eavesdropping. I debate whether I should make myself known when I hear a big yawn and the patter of her feet moving across the floor.
Morning, Tiny,
she says, then follows it with,
Morning, hotness.
I think maybe she's talking to me, but when I swivel in my chair, I discover she's standing in front of the ostentatious picture on my wall of me scoring a goal for last year's championship game. That photo was taken about 10 minutes before I blew out my knee. Ruby's staring up at the image. She takes a sip from her glass.
Why aren't you shirtless?
If I was shirtless, no one would know what number I am, I reply. Ruby startles with a gasp and the glass slips from her fingers. It hits the floor and shatters at her feet, orange juice and shards forming a dangerous moat around her. I push out of my chair. Shit, sorry, don't move. Her face is the color of my rugby jersey in the picture, but she does what I ask and stays where she is. I skirt around the mess on the floor and head for the front door, shoving my feet into the first pair of shoes I can find. I return to where Ruby is still standing, a gorgeous, embarrassed jewel in the middle of a glass and orange juice puddle.
Let's get you out of the danger zone.
I wrap my hands around her waist and lift her up. She grabs my shoulders and leans into me, her chest pressing against mine. I didn't mean to scare you. I set her down, but I'm having difficulty letting go.
I didn't realize you were here.
She can't meet my gaze. Her hands slide down my chest and she pushes back.
Let me get a broom and a mop so I can clean that up.
I'll get it. You're not walking around without shoes. I finally release her so I can take care of the problem in the middle of the floor. It's a good thing Francesca is sleeping in her cage. Well, she's not sleeping anymore, but at least she's safe. Ruby seems to realize I'm right and stays put while I grab towels in a garbage can. Can you grab my flip-flops, please? I pass them to her and we tackle the mess in silence. Once the juice is cleaned up and the bulk of the glass is managed, Ruby gets out the vacuum cleaner while I get out the mop and fill a bucket with soapy water. I'm so sorry about this. I thought I was alone, she mumbles, still embarrassed as she winds the cord of the vacuum cleaner back up. I figured as much when you started talking to my poster like it was going to answer you. She grimaces and gives me a dirty look. Thanks for just letting that go. Would you feel better about my razzing you if I take my shirt off? Ugh, I'm going back to bed. She turns to leave, but I grab her wrist, stopping her. I don't know what's happened since I've come back from London, but I don't like the awkwardness between us. Wait, don't. I'll stop. Come have something to eat with me. I have to get ready for rehearsal. What time do you have to be there? I can drive you. Come sit with me. You have to eat before you go, right? Let's have lunch. Shit. I sound really fucking desperate right now. Maybe because I am. I haven't seen you since I got back, Ruby. It's like you're avoiding me. Her eyes drop. Are you? She fidgets with her fingers. This isn't the Ruby I'm used to. I've been working and so have you. Is it because of what happened the other night? You ending up in my bed? I wasn't really awake. So you admit it. Thank fucking Christ. I thought I was losing my damn mind. That gets me an annoyed glare, which I like a lot better than this sudden insecurity. Are you serious with this? You had me questioning whether or not I was imagining things. I knew it was way too visceral to be a dream. Ruby purses her lips. You're going to get on me about this now, too? It was an accident. You're more than welcome to have more accidents like that anytime you want. Ruby's mouth drops open. I want to close the space between us. I want to slip my thumb into her mouth and feel her lips close around it. I want to know if she'll suck or bite, but I have a feeling if I do, I'm going to create more distance rather than less. Well, it wouldn't have happened if you'd been smart enough to lock your door, she fires back. Like you've been locking yours? She blinks. Why are you trying to get into my room when I'm sleeping? Because you've been avoiding me. I have not. Have too. She plants her fists on her hips. Is this a kindergarten fight? Are you going to stick your tongue out and say neener neener? I can't and don't want to contain my grin. I can see she's trying to keep a straight face, but is unable to maintain it. Her grin is exactly what I need to see. I missed you this week. I take her hand and tug her toward the kitchen. Come hang out with me before you have to leave. Her fingers wrap around mine and squeeze for a second. Okay. The following Friday, Armstrong, his friend Drew, some guy I've never met before and I'm not sure I like, and my brothers follow me down the hall to my condo. It's been a long time since I've had the guys over to watch a game, and I'm not sure how well it's going to go with the way Lex keeps making snide comments to Armstrong every chance he gets. Those two are competitive, particularly when it comes to women, and I really never understood why. But tonight, since Ruby's out until who knows what time, I figured it would be good for me to do something other than wait for her to come home. It's starting to be a problem. Well, it's been a problem for a while, but it's getting worse. Ever since the night she ended up in my bed. I'd like to say I figured out a way to manage this situation, but I haven't. Ruby's hours are opposite mine, so we're rarely home at the same time, and I've been stuck at the office until late almost every day this week, so we haven't seen much of each other, and when we do, she's always skittering away like I make her nervous. Even the innuendo-laden banter has died since my return. I can't corner her long enough to find out what the hell is going on. Tonight, there's no sexual tension to contend with because Ruby's working. I hold my thumb to the sensor, waiting for my print to register. There's a brief lull in Armstrong's monologue, and the sound of bass registers. It vibrates through my feet and my hand as I turn the knob. Maybe Ruby left the TV on or the stereo. Neither hypothesis is correct, I find, as soon as I open the door. The sight I'm greeted with is immediately stored in the vault in my head labeled Jerk It. In the middle of my living room are five women. Five scantily clad women wearing heels with their asses facing the door. I can pick Ruby's out immediately. She's on the far right, closest to me. She's wearing my favorite fucking shorts. Is this a surprise bachelor party? Did you buy me strippers? Armstrong sounds far too excited about this. They're not strippers, I snap. Except the way these women are moving, the sway of hips, and the shaking of booty makes me question whether or not what I've just said is true. They do some kind of dirty, thrusty spin until they're facing the door. They're all so caught up in the synchronized routine and following the one in the middle, who is shouting directions, that they fail to notice us right away. My focus is solely on Ruby and the way her leg does this pinwheeling thing, followed by a kick in which she catches her ankle while it's beside her ear. That level of flexibility will be fantastic in bed, when I get her back into mine. I would like that to be right now. I know the one on the end, Drew points at Ruby. As she releases her leg, she notices me, and the rest of the guys standing in the doorway. Her perfect pouty mouth forms the words, oh shit, but I can't hear them because the music is so loud. She stumbles a little, her eyes going wide. She runs, in heels that look rather dangerous, across the room and stops the music. What are you doing? The woman in the center yells. We're in the mid- Ruby cuts her off, eyes on me. I thought you were out tonight. I thought you said you were out, I reply. My voice is gravel, truck rumble low. You said you were watching the game with the guys. Ruby's is atypically high. I am. You said you had rehearsal. I do. We are. I am so sorry. When you said you were watching the game, I thought you meant at a bar, not here. Ruby's a little sweaty. Her bangs are damp and sticking to her forehead. There's a sheen to her skin and her cheeks are flushed. It's very similar to how I imagine she might look when I'm making her come, hard and repeatedly. She's also wearing so little that it's easy to imagine such an event rather vividly. She's paired her tiny shorts with a sports bra. Her abs look incredible. All of her looks incredible. The bra isn't one of those ones that reduces a chest into a uni-boob state, though. It's strappy and sexy, and it looks a little complicated to take off, like something I might accidentally tear in my zeal to get her naked, which I am very interested in doing right now. Ruby? Drew's voice drags our eyes off each other and over to him. Her eyes go wide. Drew? You two know each other? I ask. Actually, I think it may be more of a growl. Her gaze flickers back to me and then away again. Wow. Drew's eyes slide over her frame in a way that seems entirely too familiar. It's been a while. You filled out nicely. Ruby's eyebrow shoots up. Filled out? How do you two know each other? I ask, again. It's definitely a full-on growl now. We went out a couple years ago, Drew says absently, still staring at Ruby. He has this look on his face, the kind that makes me wonder if he knows what she looks like with all of her clothes off. Based on the color Ruby's cheeks are going, I have a feeling that might actually be the unfortunate reality. Like once, it wasn't a big deal, she says. I should get your number again, Drew suggests. Ruby's lip curls. No thanks, I remember very clearly how the last date ended. I'm pretty sure I'm not interested in a repeat of those 3 lackluster minutes. Oh, snap, one of the girls behind Ruby says, and the other ones start giggling. I, on the other hand, want to rip Drew's head off and punt it off the roof of my building. I see your winning personality hasn't changed much, Drew shoots back. I see your hair hated you enough to start migrating down your body, Ruby retorts. It's actually a pretty decent insult. Lexington snickers. Drew runs a self-conscious hand through his hair. Slutty and bitchy. Now I remember why I didn't call you again. Ruby launches herself at Drew. I catch her around the waist and she kicks out at him, narrowly missing his nuts. I almost wish she would have hit the mark. I point a finger right in Drew's face. Watch your fucking mouth if you want your teeth to stay where they are. Oh shit, is she your girlfriend? Drew asks. Ruby puts her hand on my chest and pushes, trying to get free. Put me down, Tarzan. I'm sorry I called her those things. Drew looks a little ill, possibly because I outweigh him by at least 50 pounds, and unlike him, I'm not afraid to get punched in the face. I set Ruby down and she gets right up in his face, propping one fist on her hip. I'm right here, jerk off. If you're going to apologize to anyone for calling me names, it better damn well be me. Her shorts are all wonky again, one side riding up so her cheek is on display. It always seems to be the right one. I reach out and slide my finger under the fabric, putting it back in place. She jumps and bats my hand away. What are you doing? Just covering you up, babe. She glares at me. It's a sexy look on her. Maybe we should head to the bar, unless... Griffin trails off. His expression reflects his discomfort with the current situation. We have to go soon anyway. Ruby turns to face the girls. I don't fail to notice that Drew's eyes, along with everyone else's, including Armstrong's, drop to her ass. Sorry, girls, I'll just grab my things.
You ladies don't have to rush out of here. We're more than happy to share the space, Lex says.
I fight an eye roll. They all just give him a look as they pull tanks or tight-fitting shirts over their heads, grabbing purses from the couch. The tallest of the girls saunters over, her hips swaying hard as she looks us over. Her gaze falls on me.
You must be Bancroft.
I am, and you are?
Diva, sorry about the confusion. Thanks for letting us use your space. You boys should come see us later.
She looks to Drew.
Except maybe not you.
She rummages around in her purse and pulls out a card, handing it to me.
We go on at 10. Ruby has her solo at 11.
Thanks. I'll see what I can do. I pocket the card without looking at it. I don't know if I want these guys watching Ruby move like that, especially not this Drew guy who's apparently already had the pleasure of getting to know what Ruby feels like from the inside. Fucker. Ruby appears a few seconds later, an oversized sweatshirt hanging off one shoulder, almost covering her shorts completely, her bag thrown over her shoulder. The heels are gone, replaced by flats.
I'm sorry I misunderstood, she says to me, then turns to Drew.
I feel like I need to be totally honest with you. If you had called me again for another hookup,
she makes air quotes,
there's no way in hell I would have considered it based on your highly inadequate performance the first time. It was like having sex with a jackhammer.
She brushes past him. The rest of the girls follow after, every single one of them giving Drew a dirty look on the way. The one named Diva winks at Armstrong and he winks back. The sound of yippy barking has me cringing. Ms. Blackwood is standing in the hallway with Precious cradled protectively in her arms. Her eyes are as wide as they can go and her mouth is a flat red slash. She looks utterly scandalized when the one who calls herself Diva prances up to her and taps Precious on the nose while she snarls. As the girls traipse down the hall, she turns to me.
I didn't realize you'd returned, Bancroft. Are those...
She seems to struggle to find the right word.
Friends of yours?
I got back last week. They're friends of Ruby's. At her questioning look, I prompt. She was watching my place while I was gone, remember?
Oh, yes, of course. But she's still here?
She definitely is.
Well, I hope her friends aren't going to cause trouble.
I flash her a smile and wink. Don't worry, Miss Blackwood, I know how to handle trouble. As soon as the door closes, Lex lets out a low whistle. Now I know why you let her move in here. That chick is smoking. I didn't let her move in because she's hot. I needed someone to take care of Francesca and Tiny. Armstrong snorts. I call bullshit on that, brother. Lex points to his crotch. I'd sure let her play with my ferret. I get up in his space. Keep your fucking ferret away from her unless you want to lose it. He gives me one of his know-it-all grins. Well, this explains everything. What are you talking about? London, you fool. Turning down the offers for room keys when we were in the hotel bar. You always wanting to go back to your room early. All the phone calls you couldn't miss. You gotta be hitting that. I hit that, Drew says. He's almost sneering until I turn around and point a finger in his face. You seriously need to shut it unless you want to know what a broken nose feels like. He nods. Shutting it. You are hitting that, right? Lex asks again. I don't know why he insists on having this information. I give him a look. Ruby is not a that, and I'm not sleeping with her. Yet. He gapes at me. Seriously, Bane, we need to sit down and have a talk. How the hell are you not hitting that? Did you see what she can do with her leg? Did you see her ass? He holds up his hands as if he's grabbing it. His facial expression would be priceless if he wasn't talking about Ruby. His eyes light up. We're gonna go see their show tonight, right? I slide the card out of my back pocket and scan it. The address is at the bottom. Griffin looks over my shoulder. I thought you said Ruby was in theater. She is. But that... I elbow him in the ribs. The card isn't advertising dinner theater, it's a burlesque show. So, you want us to go to my place to watch the game? Griffin asks. That's probably a good idea. There's not a chance in hell anyone but me is going to see Ruby's show.
Chapter 17. The Jig is Up. Ruby. I'm so embarrassed and annoyed and embarrassed. What is Drew doing hanging out with Bane? I mean, I guess it's not that hard to believe, considering all the super wealthy people in this city like to stick close to each other. It's like wealth incest. I'm in a terrible mood as I suit up in my costume. It's beautiful, sheer, gauzy, and flowing. It's on the revealing side, which is not unusual for a burlesque-style show, but having seen the way Drew was looking at me, as if I was meat he'd like to sink his teeth into again, makes me even more aware that the job I have really isn't one I can keep long-term. In the weeks I've been working here, I've dropped a lot of inhibitions. It's been good for me in some ways, but the secrecy is eating at me. Diva is sitting beside me, applying makeup, just like me. She sweeps a generous amount of lip gloss along her bottom lip, then dabs with powder and follows up with liner. She repeats the process 3 times. Her lips always look fabulous. I'm learning all the best tricks from these women. My least favorite is the glitter, though. It gets into everything. And I mean everything. All the time. What do you think the chances are that you can hook me up with a number for one of those guys? I stop applying mascara to glance at her. I don't really know if you want to date any of those guys, except maybe Bancroft, but he's off limits. I don't want to date any of them. I want to make them fall in love with my pussy so they'll buy me nice things. And don't you worry, baby girl. It was clear the second that man walked in the door that he's all about you. What do you mean? Things aren't quite the same since he's come back from London. It's my fault it's this way. I'm so conflicted. I want him, but I don't want to feel like one of his pets, another thing he has to take care of. And when I'm near him, I have a very hard time remembering that. So I've been avoiding him, which clearly isn't helpful at all. Diva snorts. I'm surprised he didn't throw you over his shoulder, caveman style, and carry you off to his bedroom as soon as he walked in. How amazing is he in bed? I have no idea. Now it's her turn to pause in the makeup application. I'm sorry. Can you repeat that? We're not sleeping together. Well, once he sees you shake your thing, I bet that'll change. Maybe I should practice my solo routine while he's watching a game next week. I snort at the idea, then think about how he was looking at me tonight. I don't think you'll have to wait that long. Why do you say that? Diva adjusts her tiara, then pulls out her glitter dust. I told him and his friends they should come tonight. You did what? Diva gives me one of her calm-the-fuck-down looks. Girl, that man is going to crack like an egg when he sees you up there. I can't tell her Bancroft doesn't know about the reality of my job. I like Diva. I like all the girls I work with. They're far more genuine than a lot of the girls I grew up with, or the ones I'm forced to deal with at the hoity-toity upper-crust events and socials. Inviting them to Bancroft's to rehearse was a big deal. I explained that it was just temporary, that he was a friend of a friend who needed a hand, blah, blah, blah. I didn't need an elaborate story, just a plausible one. The only thing they cared about was the incredible space we could rehearse in that didn't smell like stale beer and horniness. But now, as I sit here, I have to come to terms with the fact that I've been lying to everyone. These girls who have become my friends in the past few weeks. My best friend. The man whose condo I've been squatting in for more than a month and who has been nothing but generous. The man whose bed I slept in. The man I'd like to sleep with on a regular basis. Oh, God. I want him to be my boyfriend. Or my friend who also shares his penis with me on a regular basis. Daily, even. Over these past weeks, I've begun to really like him. A lot. More than a lot, even. And now he's going to know I've been lying. If I didn't come from a family with a buttload of money, this probably wouldn't be a big deal. But I do, so it is. More than that, I've kept it secret because part of me is ashamed. I shouldn't be. These are good women who work hard. And now Bancroft is going to see me up on that stage, and maybe Armstrong. And that inadequately endowed jerk-off, Drew. Unless Bancroft has punched him out. That would be nice. I grab my phone and fire off a text to Bancroft. Do not come tonight. It takes less than a minute for me to get one back. It's a picture of the club business card, followed by a message. This doesn't look like dinner theater. I can almost hear his disapproval. Damn it. I don't need his judgment. I have enough of my own. Well done, Sherlock. The next message I get from him is a frowny face. The one after that sends my stomach plummeting to the floor. See you soon. Shit! What's wrong? Diva asks, clearly oblivious to my plight, because she's just another person I've been withholding the truth from. I'm a terrible person. I'm also freaking out. Bancroft is coming tonight. Hopefully he won't be the only one. She winks. You'll be magic out there, Ruby. You always are. You move like a dream. It's meant to make me feel better. She thinks I'm nervous. And I am, but not for the reason she assumes. Come on, we need to be on stage in 10. She pats me on the shoulder. I message Bancroft one last time, but he doesn't respond. My stomach is in knots. This is so bad. I need this to not be happening right now. But it is. I'm going to have to deal with it. I'm going to have to deal with a lot of things, it seems. I finish getting ready and prepare for judgment to rain down on me. Diva has a point, though. I'm really good at this. I've always played pretty tame roles. My dancing has always been more classical jazz ballet than this contemporary sexy stuff I've had to learn in a short period of time. While this may be a far distant cry from Broadway, it certainly has been an unforgettable experience. We're halfway through the first set when I spot him. He's impossible to miss. He dwarfs the bouncers carting people at the door. All the tables are already claimed, so he props himself up against the wall at the back of the room, arms crossed over his chest. He's so pissed off. And sexy. And angry. Wow, does he ever look angry? And his anger makes me angry. He doesn't have a right to be mad at me for this job. He can shove his judging eyes right up his stuffy, tight ass. Wait, that sounds wrong. The set ends. I have enough time for a quick costume change. My solo is different. It's a little less in-your-face body and a little more along the classical lines I was trained in. It's still sexy, though, thanks to the ridiculously skimpy yet tasteful and arty outfit I'm currently wearing. Bancroft is still standing in the same place when I take the stage for my solo. He can't see me because the stage is dark, but I can see him. He keeps looking to the right, toward the door that leads to the dressing rooms and backstage. And then the lights come up, and his gaze is suddenly trained on me. I can't look at him. I'm so nervous. It feels like the first time I ever performed. I remember the butterflies. I remember puking after the first act and the second. It feels a little like that now. I better not puke. I need this job. It's the longest 4 minutes and 37 seconds of my life. The applause usually makes the smile I wear genuine. I'm staring out into the crowd, and I have a smile plastered on my face, but it's forced. Bancroft is clapping, slow and steady, but his expression is dark. I don't know what it means. Is he going to be waiting for me when I come out? Is he going to change the code and kick me out? The second thought is fairly fatalist of me. He doesn't really have a reason for such a strong reaction. He can be upset that I lied. He can throw his judgment around at me for my choice. But at least I haven't caved and gone home to Daddy. Yet. Dottie stops me on the way out of the dressing room.
There's some guy out there looking for you. Says he's your roommate and he's here to pick you up, but he can't wait long. I just wanted to check to make sure that wasn't a load of bullshit and he isn't some kind of stalker fan.
Tall, dark hair, bigger than the bouncers? Drop dead gorgeous?
That would be the one.
I'll be out in 5. Can he wait for me at the employee entrance?
If that's why you want him,
he doesn't look happy. I imagine. I won't be long. I don't even bother to change out of my costume. I grab my outfits, shove them in my bag, throw on an oversized cardigan, and leave my makeup alone. I'll deal with that when I get home. After I freak out on Bancroft for being a judgmental asshole. He's standing at the entrance to the club looking uncomfortable. When he sees me, his eyes move over me. But I don't get a smile. All I get is a cold stare.
Ready to go home?
I don't say anything. Instead, I brush past him, holding my head up high as my stomach churns. When I reach the top of the stairs, I realize I have no idea where he's parked, so I'm forced to cease my haughty strutting and wait. Sweet Lord, he looks delicious. He's wearing a pair of dark dress pants and a dark button-down shirt. It's open at the collar. He's very Johnny Cash right now. Even his expression is angsty and hot. I wish I wasn't preparing to be angry at him so I could fully appreciate it. He barely glances at me as he turns left, and I follow him down the street. He's walking fast. I didn't change from heels to flats. I'm pretty good in them, but it's dark, and I can't see the miniature potholes and cracks in the sidewalk well enough to feel safe at this speed.
Will you slow down? We're not running a marathon.
Bancroft whirls around, and I almost slam right into him. As it is, I have to put up my hands to keep my face from planting into his chest. His hands are balled into fists. His nostrils are flared. His chest is heaving. And all I want to do is rip off his clothes and ride him like a rodeo bull. Too bad that's not likely to happen. His left cheek ticks.
You didn't seem to have a problem with those shoes while you were on stage.
It's a flat, even surface. I gesture to the sidewalk. This is not...
Would you like me to carry you?
I'm not dressed for a piggyback ride. I snap. His gaze moves darkly over me.
No, you certainly aren't.
With that, he takes a step forward, drops almost to his knee, wraps an arm around the top of my thighs, very high on my thighs, so high his thumb is close to grazing parts of me he probably doesn't want to right now, what with him being so angry.
What are you doing?
Getting you home.
And with that, he stands. Now, if I wasn't a trained dancer with incredibly strong abs, I would probably flop right over, because this is clearly his plan, to carry me away like a caveman.
just like Diva said he wanted to. I wonder if she's psychic. Are you kidding me with this? I snap. I rate. I'm perilously close to dropping my bag. I consider hitting him with it. But if he drops me, it's a long way down. I can't afford a sprained ankle. And bruises are hard to cover with makeup. I let it slide down my shoulder and bump him on the butt. If I relaxed and let him pull this Cro-Magnon BS on me, my face might actually hit his butt. But then I'd be giving him what he wants. Which is, well, I don't know exactly, other than to get me in his truck. And probably get righteous with me. I stay upright, putting lots of pressure on his shoulder with the heel of my hand to maintain this unnatural position. We pass half a dozen couples on the way to the car. Bancroft is extra pleasant with them, asking them how their evening is going, wishing them a nice night, commenting on the weather. And the entire time, his thumb is disturbingly close to my girl parts, which don't seem to recognize that this situation is likely not going to lead to fun things. Less than a minute later, Bancroft is carrying me through a parking lot. It's dodgy, as is the rest of this neighborhood, but the lot has an attendant. He stares at us as we pass by. Bancroft lifts his hand in a wave, and I just roll my eyes. I'm a little disturbed by the fact that not one person we've passed has asked if I'm okay. Just because Bancroft is hot and well-dressed doesn't mean he's not kidnapping me. I suppose if I was putting up more of a fight, it might help. He sets me down beside his truck. It beeps and the lights flash. He reaches around me to open the door. I'm facing him, so it hits me in the butt. I cross my arms over my chest. That was completely unnecessary.
I disagree. Would you like to get in the truck now, Ruby?
Not particularly, no. Bancroft gives me a tight smile.
Will you please get in before a group of thugs swarm us and tries to steal you?
No one is going to steal me. He steps in rather close.
If I was a thug, I would steal you.
Well, now, that's a little disconcerting. Why would anyone want to steal me?
Will you please just get in the truck?
I hate it when people answer questions with more questions. Evasiveness is annoying. As if I have a right to complain about evasiveness. Well, if you'd give me some space, maybe I could. He wraps his arm around my waist, pulling me up tight against him. I huff, and then maybe I gasp, just a little. I swear I can feel hardness against my stomach, and it's not his belt. He sets me down quickly, though, takes my bag and holds the door open, waiting until I'm in before he closes it, harder than necessary. His jaw is working and his brow is furrowed as he rounds the hood. He slides into the driver's seat and starts the engine without saying a word. I'm so irritated right now. He pulls onto the street, still silent. I'm the first to break. You have no right to judge me.
I'm not judging you.
I scoff. He comes to a stop at a red light. The tension is so thick, it's like wading through jello. He turns his head slowly, so he's looking at me. I glare back.
Why would I judge you?
Oh, come on, Bancroft. Look at me. I shrug out of my cardigan and gesture to my outfit. My skimpy, gauzy outfit. I've never actually felt sexier than I do when I'm dancing in this, but that's beside the point.
Oh, I'm looking.
The light turns green and he shifts into gear. I never learned how to drive stick. Not the car, anyway. I huff and fume some more.
You want to know what I think?
I'm sure you're going to tell me regardless of what I say.
You are the one who's judging you.
I bite the inside of my lip, trying to come up with some kind of sassy, snappy retort. But I don't have one. Because he's right. I am judging myself. I'm so worried about what the other people in my life are going to think about this temporary career move, which would be viewed as a complete and utter downgrade from what I've been attempting to accomplish in the theater industry, that I've labeled myself a failure. And I'm expecting everyone else to do the same, even though it's actually quite far from the truth. Of course I'm judging myself. This isn't the direction I thought my career would go, but that doesn't explain why you're so angry with me.
You want to know why?
Bancroft sounds incredulous. I throw my hands up in the air. It's dramatic. Yes! Why?
You lied to me.
I stretched the truth. Bancroft expels a long, slow breath. He's gripping the steering wheel tightly.
That is a far cry from dinner theater, Ruby.
What did you want me to say? I got a job dancing naked on the stage in a burlesque-style show?
Yes, Ruby. That's exactly what I want. The truth.
I don't see why it matters so much to you. I'm just your pet sitter. Bancroft's jaw ticks. I'm pretty sure I can hear his teeth grinding. He mutters something under his breath. I'm sorry, what was that?
Is that what you really think? That you're just my pet sitter?
Aren't I? My stomach is churning. This is a dangerous conversation to have. I know I'm not just his pet sitter, that this thing between us has turned into something else. But I'm so hung up on my fear of being financially dependent on him that I've ignored the real issue. I'm already emotionally dependent on him, which may be even worse. He skirts the question with more of his own.
You live in my house. I give you access to all of my things, codes, personal information. I put trust in you and you broke it. And why? Because you think I won't approve of your choice of employment?
Well, do you approve?
If you're my pet sitter, why would my approval matter?
He fires back. Stop answering questions with more questions, I shout. He licks his lips, eyes fixed firmly on the road.
I don't like the neighborhood you're working in. I don't like that you have to take the subway home at the end of the night.
I keep my eyes on the dash. Sometimes I Uber when it's really late.
Does someone walk out with you every night? Do they make sure you're safe? Or are you on your own?
His tone is hard, angry. I'm evasive with my answer. It's not that bad of a neighborhood.
It's not a great one either.
His jaw ticks with his frustration.